You're listening to Extra Time Radio.
David Goss is in my house. I will not let him sit on the furniture.
No.
He's sitting on the floor right now. Yeah. He doesn't get to have a chair anymore.
That's what I'm willing to do.
Hat trick for Deuce. Two hat tricks in four games.
Are you watching the games? Are you just looking at the stats?
Hodgepodge. Yeah, there's a Modge Podge. Whole Modge Podge of rumors.
This is a transfer Modge Podge.
It is an ungodly mess.
Yeah. I'm just trying to think about what I want to say.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time Radio on SiriusXM FC Channel 85 and MLSsoccer.com. I am Andrew Wiebe. With me, not as always, but kind of as always, David Goss here in the studio, also in the broom closet for not the first time, I don't think.
First time in months and months.
In months, yeah. See, you hear those dulcet tones? That's Matt Doyle in the flesh.
That's right.
Here, legs crossed, very classy of him.
Relaxing in the big city.
Yeah, no cats in here to bother him. We do have a question about the octagon in the mailbag. Some people don't know what it is, so we might have to explain that to them. That's for a later segment, though.
Do you get stressed out by New York City? Are you like one of those that left and then you're like, oh, how did this ever work?
A little bit, yeah. But that might be more age than anything else, you know.
Well, it's everyone
God,
leaves
so self-aware.
And gets older.
That's a good point. Those two things do go together. Look, we have a huge show for you today. You probably were tuning in yesterday on Sunday. The final push to the playoffs went down. Week 33, and it was a doozy for good and for bad reasons. Today's show, no guests. The reasons being, well, there's a lot of them. Number one is we just don't have time to talk about everything we want to talk about if we pull somebody on here. FC Dallas in Colorado, that's 1-2 for the Supporters' Shield. The red line in the East is moot, although seeding still up for grabs. Meanwhile, in the West, 1-3 are locked, 4-7 are battling. We'll see what happens. Some great games this weekend on Decision Day. Injuries, injuries, injuries. You can't see this because this is radio. I'm crying. You can't hear it in my voice, but it's the natural reaction to Mauro Diaz potentially being out for months and months and months, and it really is a sad thing. Also, Kellen Acosta, Diego Valera, Yoram Avcisian, Ronald Matarrita. I mean, on and on and on down the injury list we go. The Golden Boots coming down to the wire, BWP and David Villa, and then, last but not least, Drogbagate. Didier Drogba, you probably heard, made the decision that he did not want to be a part of that 18 at home against Toronto FC, a huge game for the Impact. He was not there for that one. His future in doubt. Quickly, before we get into things, guys, Decision Day, as I said, it's going to be lit. MLS Match Day Live, which Matt Doyle and I, don't laugh at my lit. Come on, I can say that.
He's
I guess
cool,
I'm 30 now,
trendy.
So I can't say no. That. You're right. I'll never say that
but
again.
But he lives in Brooklyn, so that makes him 26.
Oh,
that's
boy.
True. And I have a young face. Give me some credit. MLS Match Day Live. You might have tuned in on the final push of the playoffs this Sunday. Matt and I doing our thing. But more importantly, Kalen Carr, Adrian Heath Pierce,
no,
Rusty Taylor.
They're not more important
really?
Than us.
Okay.
No, we're the stars, dude.
Okay,
come on.
That's right. That's right. We are the stars, and we will be back on Sunday along with Siggy Schmidt and Martin Rennie for that pregame and postgame show right here on MLSsoccer.com, also on the MLS Facebook page. If you want to check that one out, ESPN3 as well, I believe. So it's all over the place. It starts at 3 p.m. and then all 10 are at 4 p.m. Eastern, and it's going to be really hard to follow. But you can do it on ESPN for Seattle RSL. You can do it on FS1 for LA Dallas. You can also get a Decision Day whip around, which is going to be a blast. I can guarantee that.
It's going to be lit.
On ESPN2. See,
it
now,
sounds really
you're
natural.
Right. You're right. When you say it, I realize how terrible that was. Also, MLS Live, one-day passes, $7.99. And my final point before we get into the games and the action and our analysis, the MLSsoccer.com bracket challenge starts right after those Decision Day games are over. Basically, you get to guess through the playoffs. There's prizes at stake. There's an ETR league you should definitely sign up for. And one of the VIP prizes is a trip to LA for the 2017 Superdraft. So all that worth your time and more. With no further ado, let's jump into it, guys. Dallas, big winners here on Sunday at home against Seattle. 2-1, two late goals from Arruti and the god, Pescadito, but Mauro Diaz, in stoppage time, goes down under a tackle from Tyrone Mears, immediately grabs his Achilles, makes a motion with his hands, you obviously can't see this, but pulling something apart, and then gets taken off on a stretcher. Yeah. I've lit every candle I can find this morning. I've placed them at my Pescadito shrine, hoping that maybe the fish and his CONCACAF magic can bring Mauro back from what is being reported as potentially a not just season-ending injury, but many months of recovery. The worst-case scenario here is that Achilles has ruptured. We will find out more. He's got an MRI scheduled for Monday, and we'll update you, of course, on Thursday's show. This is terrible news for FC Dallas. This is terrible news for everyone.
Yeah, this is worst-case scenario for FC Dallas and for people who like good soccer, because Mauro Diaz is one of the three or four most entertaining players in the league. Look, it was a foul from Tyrone Mears. I don't think it was an unusually aggressive challenge, and obviously if you play against a player like Mauro Diaz, you want to let him know you're there, you want to bang him around a little bit, which is the exact same thing FC Dallas was doing to Nicolas Lodero all game. To me, it was just more of a little bit of bad luck with just the, I think the, it wasn't even his plant foot, it was his, he got hit on the left foot, which was his plant foot, but his right Achilles is the one that looks like it snapped. These injuries are usually 8 to 12 months, and that's a damn shame for FC Dallas.
It didn't look malicious. And when you saw it happen, you weren't thinking, oh, man, this is it. He's done. You were thinking, okay, garden variety foul. They're just, you know, doing their thing in stoppage time. And that's really the shame of it as well, is the game was not decided, but it was basically over. Dallas up 2-1 at that point.
On what had been an absolutely magical Mauro Diaz pass to the
Pescadito,
god Pescadito.
Yeah, Carlos Ruiz. Kellen Acosta also left this match and reported that he was on crutches afterwards. We're still waiting for word on what exactly his injury might be. Let's talk about that goal, though. Urruti with a cleanup job on a set piece to get it to 1-1. Nicolas Lodero, you mentioned him, the magician, Poseidon, left-footed free kick from way out. Chris Seitz caught leaning. He finds that bottom corner, sneaks it in. But, Dave, I was as jacked as I've ever been after this Pescadito goal. This is before the Mauro injury, of course. Beautiful build-up play. Mauro flip over the top.
It was awesome.
Ruiz does.
It's like one of those things where it's like, I genuinely don't think, if you ask me, that his leg could go that high. But he just sees goals, and that's the only thing that he thinks about, and that's why they brought him in. That's what he's there for.
I mean, the run.
Yeah.
The little run, and you see him throw his hand up for Mauro, and Mauro goes first time over the top, right into the perfect spot, and he follows it like a receiver over his shoulder.
Yeah.
That little
perfect
curl.
Contact.
That
he's
curl.
An expert in the small things that he does around the box and scores goals. It doesn't matter how athletic he is, because it's just a burst. It's just 2 feet, it's just turning your body the correct way. It's coming off the defender the correct way. It's reading the play the right way.
The timing.
I mean, he's been doing it for 25 years at this point of his life.
Yep.
He's been scoring goals. He knows what he's doing in those situations. But he's not good enough to, you know, get over the fact that Mauro Rosales and Fabian Castillo are
not
part of this
team. You're
not
going to stick him back at the number 10.
No,
I mean,
and
he's your gun off the bench.
Yeah, and I said Mauro Rosales.
You did,
I meant to say Mauro Diaz, but I was going to say in games when Diaz hasn't played, Rosales has not looked good enough to carry that mantle. Yeah. And I do not think
they have Lizarazo, I guess, on the bench as well, who's nominally an attacking midfielder. He hasn't been particularly good.
And Barrios struggles in games that Diaz
agree. I mean,
there.
Barrios has been kind of a non-entity down the stretch
since
here.
Castillo left.
Yeah.
Basically since focus turned to him.
I mean, is it too soon for Paxton Pomykal? This kid has there's a lot of hype around him. There's high expectations. One of the reasons they were able to say, you know what, we're going to sell Alex Zendejas is because they're that high on Pomykal. They think he's going to be a better player. But he's 16 years old, and we're talking about a supporter.
It's like bringing up your number one prospect for the postseason just to, like, pitch out
from
of
like
the pen
single
or something.
A and
yeah.
Just being like, yep, come in and not only hit three, and like we need you to hit like four bombs over the course of this postseason. Yeah. It's not going to happen. I don't think Pomykal's going to get into this lineup. I think they'll go 4-4-2.
If Kellen Acosta's healthy, though, I think they will play him in that role as they have done in the past, not in the same way, and I think they'll go more defensive and hope to score off set pieces and hope to score off.
Yeah, look, Rosales, I think, can be a serviceable chance creator, but only from the wing, and only if you get him in time and space and you've got guys crashing. And that would be Urruti, you would think, and that would be Barrios, maybe, but neither of those guys really forces to be reckoned with as far as guys in the air. Now, look, FC Dallas are in pole position for the Supporters Shield. We talked about it ad nauseum on a number of shows here. The Rapids had their destiny in their hands. They got a big win midweek against San Jose. They could not knock off the Portland Timbers, who now have their destiny, playoff destiny, in their hands. Don't bet against Caleb Porter in October, as always. FC Dallas at the top of the Western Conference and the Supporters Shield standings.
I understand.
59 points. Right behind them, the Colorado Rapids on 57. Those two will be 1-2 in the Western Conference. They will get a bye, no doubt about that. The LA Galaxy, by virtue of a 1-0 win against the Houston Dynamo, will for sure be 3. So they'll get that home game in the knockout round against whoever finishes 6th. But the rest of it, I mean, it's really up for grabs. Look, on Thursday, we'll talk, I think, a little bit more about what FC Dallas does. We'll also talk about their treble hopes because I think there's a decent chance those have been dashed.
Yeah.
Great chance to get the double. And that would still be an incredibly impressive season in which Fabian Castillo leaves halfway through. But, boy, making it through the West and the playoffs without Mauro Diaz, that might be a step too much. Remember, FC Dallas, CCL action midweek. They head to Guatemala, and then they are going to take on LA in the final game of the season. That one, as I said, on FS1.
And they need a result in Guatemala as well. So this is a tough week for Dallas.
And it's a Thursday game. It's not even a Tuesday or Wednesday where they have more time after.
Things not setting up too well for them. On the other side, the Sounders failed to clinch again. If they would have won this game and they were up 1-0, they would have clinched their spot in the playoffs. They didn't do it. Now in the Western Conference, it's 4-7, and it's a battle royale, and basically anything can happen here. But let's talk about Portland first before we kind of get into these scenarios. The 1-0 win against Colorado, they could be above the red line, but Fernando Adi, top 5 worst miss in MLS history?
It's up there. I mean, it immediately draws to mind that Kai Kamara miss from, I want to say, 7-8 years ago where he... I don't even have the words.
I don't either.
So this is definitely the miss of the season, and it's the miss that has them below the red line on goal differential. If he scores that second PK or the rebound, the Timbers are in sixth place today.
Yeah, got stoned and then had the whole goal in front of him, and I'm not even sure how you would define the angle other than impossible for him to put this thing off frame. As a professional and a double-digit goal scorer, it's pretty wild.
I was sitting next to Wiebe as it happened. We were watching the game, and he swore up and down that he scores that goal. Does Andrew
on
Wiebe
the rebound?
Convert?
I'm not talking about the PK on the rebound.
I'll tell you this: I missed that exact opportunity on someone else's rebound very recently for our men's league team. Yeah, I don't think Andrew would score, but then he'd run back and like slam his head and be like, "Ah, oh, I gotta finish that one."
Yeah, I'd probably find a way to hit the post with that.
Me too.
But you mentioned Caleb Porter in October, Dave. 9-2-3 in his 4 years in MLS in October. That's not bad. That ain't bad. And we had basically buried the Timbers over the course of the last couple weeks, especially because Seattle was running well, and you thought KC will get the results, and RSL maybe them too.
They still haven't won on the road.
Yep.
So I'm
and
not.
They have to.
I'm
they go to Vancouver in the final week here.
So let's go see that they can. They have not done anything in this month that they haven't already done.
Right.
They won games at home, and that's it.
And by the way, they have a game at home midweek against Saprissa that they have to win.
Yeah.
And Diego Chara and Liam Ridgewell will not play in Vancouver. Yellow card accumulation will rule them out, and those are huge losses.
And maybe Diego Valeri as well, who came off with about 20-25 minutes left in this game. So, I mean, this is tough for the Timbers to see this happening. That said, the one place, seemingly throughout their history, they've always traveled too well, is Vancouver.
But on the flip side, Vancouver's the one non-playoff team that has something to play for versus Portland, which is the Cascadia Cup.
Yep.
They have to win. They need the goal.
They have to win big.
Yeah, they need to win by 3 goals. But they got nothing to lose.
Yep.
You're going to open it up. You're going to try and score 3 or 4 goals in this game. If you don't have Diego Valeri, are you going to be able to go on the road and score 2 or 3 goals? No.
Yeah, it's a big question mark. Hey, look, but Vancouver's not exactly looking capable of going out there and blowing out the Timbers. 0-0 this weekend with San Jose in what was a pretty dour game. Mm-hmm. Even worse because Alphonso Davies didn't play. So all of us who wanted to see the young guy who's been so effervescent for the last couple weeks for them do something, well, we didn't get that opportunity. So we hope we see him at home in that match against the Timbers. On the other side, Colorado had that opportunity, as I said, to control their own destiny, to go into this final week against Houston thinking we're going to lift this shield. They couldn't get it done, a 1-0 loss. Kevin Doyle hits the post a couple times, but it wasn't a bad result, Doyle. It wasn't as if the performance was bad. It just the breaks didn't go their way.
Correct. I actually thought the second half they rebounded pretty well because they were outplayed in the first half, but they made some adjustments. I think they maybe went to more of a 4-5-1 and kind of changing where they were holding the ball a little bit. Part of that might have been Portland sitting back a little bit. But Colorado's got something. You know, even when they lose, they make you sweat for it. This team, if they take care of business next weekend at home against Houston, which they absolutely should, they got a good chance.
And you look at Colorado, they're used to playing without Jermaine Jones. We've talked about how much better they'd be. Then you look at the Western Conference, Dallas injuries. LA's not really settled right now. RSL has Yura Mufsisian-Go with injuries. Seattle has injuries. Sporting KC is, I don't know, limping through life right now. And Portland may have lost Valeri. So they might be the most settled team in the Western Conference. They're going to get a first-round bye. So that means two, you know, whoever's coming to play them is going to get beat up midweek. And they're going to get the second legs at home, which I think is huge for a team that doesn't concede goals at
home. And look, a 1-0 loss on the road in the playoffs in a two-leg series?
Yeah.
Pablo Mascherano look at that and say, perfect.
Yep.
We'll take that all day, every day.
And by the way, I guarantee you Jermaine Jones comes back in the next 2 weeks.
You
I guarantee
think so?
100%.
Oh, my God. On this show, with our record of guarantees, are we really going there? I don't know. That doesn't seem very wise to me. Look, if you're looking at 4-7 here in the Western Conference, because that's what can change. That's really what Decision Day, in large part, is going to be all about. RSL, Seattle, Sporting KC, Portland, 46, 45, 44, 44 on points. It is tight, and anything can happen. Seattle, as I said, hosting RSL, Vancouver hosting Portland, Sporting Kansas City hosting San Jose. So that seems to be probably the easiest match of all of those, San Jose going to Kansas City. Kansas City, unlucky not to be in a better position, though. 0-0 with RSL this weekend, but Benny Feilhaber, dead to rights, PK.
Yeah.
Waved off. Dead to rights. This is not even a question, right?
Yeah. I thought it was the worst call of the weekend. You know, usually I try not to comment too much on officiating on the Twitter machine because it like, calls are calls. This one was a miss, and it may end up costing Kansas City pretty dearly. On the other hand, it's a big favor for RSL,
who
needed
it,
because they can't score. RSL has one goal in their last five games. Things have gone really, really bad for this team.
Yeah, Yura Mufsisian coming off in this game apparently got kicked in that bruised heel. That's a big deal for them. We've talked about how that front three being together really is the key to attacking success for this squad. But look, if you're looking at scenarios, if Seattle win, they knock off RSL in Seattle, which is very plausible. RSL is 2-6-2 all time in Seattle and have lost five straight at CenturyLink, conceding 14 goals. That's not great. And Sporting KC win and Portland win, RSL are done. Portland, if they win, they're moving on. Same thing with Sporting Kansas City because of that RSL-Seattle matchup there. Now, if RSL draw, they're in. So you're starting to look at a lot of kind of caginess and strategic opportunity for all these different coaches.
Basically, I mean, the Sounders have to feel like they're facing a must-win home game.
It's a one-game playoff elimination.
It's basically a knockout round for both these two teams, for them and RSL. Yep. So, look, you'll want to tune into those, as I said, 4 p.m. on Sunday, all 10 games at once.
If Sporting KC doesn't beat San Jose
at home,
would it be worse than what New England just did to Chicago?
Yeah, because at least New England was on the road.
Right.
If you can't beat San Jose, which is the lowest scoring team in the league, and you know they have holes defensively, if you can't beat them at home in what is a must-win game, then you probably don't deserve to be in the playoffs.
That's kind of where some of these teams at the bottom of the line are exploring.
New England looked passionate about not making the playoffs this weekend.
We'll get to that in the second segment. This is a whole different ball game. And Jay Heaps quotes, you know, disappointment, yada, yada. I mean, they're in it by math, New England are, but they'd have to make up like 12 goals of goal differential, so math probably not going to be enough for them. As I mentioned, LA 1, Houston nothing. Alan Gordon, on his birthday, gets the goals, goes and celebrates by blowing out some candles on a birthday cake, and then gets the Euro kiss with Bajir Husidic. This was an incredible celebration.
It's called bussing.
It is?
Yeah, right?
What is it? Bussing?
You bust someone when you kiss them on both cheeks to say hello.
Yeah, I don't know. You should.
You guys don't know.
I don't
this
know.
Term?
I haven't heard
We're
it.
Not as
so.
Cosmopolitan as you are, I guess.
Yeah, you know, us Midwestern rubes here, just you know, whatever we want to call it, we'll give it our best bet. But the legend LD started in this one, a 4-4-2 with him on the wing. No Robbie Keane in the starting lineup. Is this LA's shape? I mean, Robbie Keane a little bit. You know, his status is up for grabs right now as far as health goes. Steven Gerrard, same deal.
Yeah, I mean, Steven Gerrard's still in Liverpool as we speak, right? So it's
beautiful Liverpool got in October, late October. Ooh, yes. It's like a resort.
I think LA have traditionally been better as a 4-4-2 team under Bruce Arena, and I know that they called this a 4-2-3-1 with Dos Santos as a number 10, but that's not really what he is. He's a second striker, and they pull the strings from deeper in midfield. And I think that they played really well in this one. I mean, it wasn't dominant, but the goal felt inevitable. They had some good chances. The shape allows Donovan to play on the wing, but then cut inside and be a playmaker. To me, that's what you want from L.A., and I think that's what they have to figure out how to be over the next 6 days ahead of this final game of the regular season, which obviously doesn't mean anything to them. But when you still don't know what your best team is,
agreed,
it means something.
Yeah, it's a no-risk opportunity, essentially, to figure that out, to have 90 more minutes for Bruce to tinker if he wants to or not tinker and let that 11 really gel in that sense. But Robbie Keane coming off the bench, or Robbie Keane not involved, that's not something we're used to from a successful playoff LA Galaxy team of the recent past. How big of a hit is that for them?
Is there a better player off the bench in the league than Robbie Keane,
though? Maybe Didier Drogba.
Whoa.
I mean, look,
we're going to get to Drogba again after the break.
This is management, right? You have to make tough decisions. And I've been saying it all year, and maybe I'm a moron, maybe I'm not. But like, I don't think that LA are at their best when they have both Keane and Dos Santos on the field.
But the ability to change a game with that substitution, I think, doesn't mean that he's not going to be a big part of any run that they would
absolutely
make.
Absolutely agree. Absolutely agree. And if you have, you know, if you're at minute 55 and you're like, this is all gone
not working,
you have that opportunity. To me, that is a weapon that few teams in MLS history have ever had.
Look, Bruce Arena has those weapons up and down his bench. I mean, if that's the case, and Robbie Keane's not, you have Alan Gordon you can pull in another. Yep. You got Mike McGee, who's just like hanging out, former
crucial
MVP.
In that goal yesterday.
Loves the playoffs, Mike McGee.
Yeah. That's true.
A lot of guys in that same ilk for LA and Bruce. So we'll see what happens with them. On the other side, Houston, more of the same. You know, couldn't really get it going in this one. Not a great result for them, obviously, in a time in which they're already out of the postseason. Probably need a number 10, you'd think. Marlon Manotas has been good, but
I mean, Manotas, I think, comes back as their starting number 9 next year. He has been very, very good, I think. Maybe not quite DP caliber, but better than Will Bruin, better than Kubo Torres. Their lack of playmaking.
Will Bruin, is he around next year in Houston?
I don't think so. I you know, he had his chance, and he has not been able to produce in anything other than a 4-4-2. And they pretty clearly don't want to be a 4-4-2 team going forward. So that puts the impetus on the midfield to be a bit more creative. Christian Maidana, who they brought in, has not gotten it done, as I think most people expected. They have to – look, they're not going to go out and spend Nicolas Lodero money, but maybe you can find the next Mauro Diaz. Maybe you can find the next Luciano Acosta.
Diego Valeri. Maybe, you know, even if you're looking at like a, you know, a Piatti who...
Maybe Lee Wynn is available via trade.
Okay.
Because the Revs might go in a different direction this offseason, and Lee Wynn just happens to be from Texas. So there are some things that you can do if you're Houston, but you got to figure it out fast. You got to make the decision about who the head coach is fast. I think it should be Wade Barrett. I understand why they're taking their time, but the season's just about over and got to make some decisions.
Western Conference, pretty wild heading into decision day. FC Dallas sitting at the top on 59 points. Right behind them, the Rapids on 57. Those two fighting for the Supporters' Shield. They're the only two still in the running. The two New Yorks have fallen off the pace. Then it's LA stuck in the three spot, and RSL, Seattle, Sporting, and Portland fighting to get above the red line and fighting for maybe a home game in that fourth seed. Remember, all the games on Decision Day, 4 p.m. You can watch a game on ESPN. That is RSL and Seattle. And you can watch one on FS1. That's LA and Dallas. That's the Western Conference. Let's head to the East, guys. There is some serious drama in Montreal.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at extratime radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Back on Extra Time Radio.
From the club.
The glow lights flying around here. Who's got the moves? Who do you think would have the best dance moves of all three of us? I'm just throwing that out there.
Probably you.
Yeah.
Mine are, I thought I had good ones, and then I kind of got called out a couple weekends ago, and they
were
characterized as a little bit stiff, and I thought, you know, this doesn't feel stiff.
If the worst thing they're saying about you is a little bit stiff, then you have better moves than me or Goss. So
I just didn't know that good. I didn't know what you meant by the best dance moves. Oh, so okay. I thought you'd be the most entertaining.
I imagine you have a very like Broadway style of dance.
Yeah,
David.
Obviously. It's mainly
a lot of like jazz hands.
It's mainly like, kick line.
Right. Okay.
So if I have partners, I look good. If I'm alone out on the dance floor,
look
it starts to look
weird.
A little awkward.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Going to see Book of Mormon on Wednesday night
it's
for the first
show.
Time ever.
It's a
oh,
great
man.
Show.
Very you let him excited. Get down this
Also,
this
I'm less than
hole.
30
nope.
days away
nope.
from Hamilton for the second time.
Nope. We are done with that. Eastern Conference matters more. So much more. Look, seven teams by the math, as I said, still alive in this one. But it's you know, it's some the odds aren't good. The math is very, very much a not going to happen thing for the New England Revolution. 39 points for them. They're 3 points behind the Union, who currently occupy the sixth spot. But the Union have a negative one goal differential, and New England have negative 13. And New England trail the Union by one win. So with the tiebreakers being wins, goal differential, goal scored, there is basically no way for the Revs to figure this one out in the final week. So we're looking at six, and that's how we're going to assume it's going to go down. Right now, the Red Bulls, number one on goal differential, they will almost 100%, like 99.999. No, it's just 100, basically, because it's a 13-goal mm-hmm. span between them and New York City FC. They will be the number one seed. But the two seed and that bye are still up for grabs because Toronto FC got a draw in Montreal. So 51 points for NYCFC, who lost in not encouraging fashion at RFK Stadium to DC United. Toronto got that draw, 50 points, so just 1 point behind there. DC United on 46 in the fourth spot. They are fighting and clawing, maybe the most on-form team in the league to get that home game at RFK. Then Montreal, then the Philadelphia Union, who are basically, unless something happens for them here in that final week and Montreal fall off, they'll probably be in the sixth spot, but they will for sure not host a game in the knockout round. They will go on the road in that one. Let's start with Montreal-Toronto FC. That's the game you saw on ESPN. You also know, if you're paying any attention at all, on this side of the Atlantic or on the other side of the Atlantic, because it started to get picked up all over the world, Didier Drogba said, I am not going to be in the 18 for this game. That's what he told Mauro Biello the day before the game when Biello, this is all via Biello at the press conference. We've not yet heard from Didier Drogba on this, so keep that in mind. Biello said, I went to Didier, I said, you will not be starting. Didier said, I don't want to be in the 18 then, and thusly was not. 2-2 draw for Montreal. They went out and got it done. They could have got a win in this one. Mario Mancosu had a good game. Nacho Piatti is just an absolute monster. But they split the points. Let's talk Drogba before we talk the game, because that really is the biggest side. My point of view, not a good move for a teammate. And Patrice Bernier says he expects Drogba to come out and speak publicly on this. But look, I get it. Didier Drogba thinks he should be a starter. On pedigree, on, you know,
offensive performance.
Yeah, on pedigree, on what he's done in the league, especially early on, mm-hmm. on his role within the club.
Salary.
Yeah, all these different things.
But none of those things matter.
Hold on. Let me finish. Sorry. He thinks he should be a starter, and I understand that. And I get him disagreeing with Mauro Biello. I just think, and, you know, for what it's worth, I haven't been a professional athlete. I haven't been in a locker room with Didier Drogba. But to me, he can come out in the press after this game and say, I was unhappy that I didn't start. I don't think that's the correct decision. I believe that I am the best option for this team as a starter, and that's where I should be. But Mauro Biello is my coach, so I have to respect his decision, and I have to respect my teammates who I've gone through this full season with, and we've fought together for the same goal.
Well, yeah. Has he?
Well, he wasn't there for preseason. I think,
but isn't this all the point? As good as he was for them at times, he hasn't been fully locked in, and he's not Robbie Keane. He's not coming off the bench because that's what's best for the team. It's clearly what's best for the team, by the way. This isn't like splitting hairs. They're winning when he's not starting. They weren't getting results when he was.
Yeah.
So this isn't a question mark. And this was his reaction to it. And if I'm Biello and I'm Montreal, I understand how much money I'm paying him and how big he is for the city. He's not part of my team anymore.
This was a brave decision by a young coach, and it was a decision that I think he had to make. It's worth noting that as soon as Montreal got the result and officially qualified for the playoffs, Didier Drogba tweeted his
congratulations.
Or whoever runs Didier Drogba's account tweeted.
Because Drogba was actually taking a selfie while driving through the south of France.
Quick stat for you. Let's see. Here are the last seven starts for Drogba with Montreal this year. 3-1 loss, 3-0 loss, 1-1 tie, 1-0 win, the only win, 4-1 loss, 3-1 loss, 1-0 loss.
Yeah.
So one win, one tie, five losses in his last seven starts.
Look, he is not a 90-minute player at this point in his career, and the cause of most of those losses is he doesn't defend. So you allow, if you start him, you're allowing the other team to just set up shop in your midfield because there's no resistance from the front line because Piatti doesn't defend all that much either. So you have two guys who you're trying to carry. Then you have a central midfield that's, frankly, pretty old.
Yeah.
It doesn't cover a lot of ground. They play smart soccer. They play good soccer. But they don't put out fires all over the pitch. They have to keep the game tight. So you have all those things combined, and you allow the other team to dictate the tempo and where the game's played. And by halftime, you are just completely wrung out. That's what happened to Montreal. It's been different with Nkosu in the starting lineup because he works so hard off the ball on both sides of the ball. And then, look, it's the same issue that we talked about with Robbie Keane. Look at the game at the 55th or 60th minute and say, you know what, we could do a little bit of something here, and you could put Drogba in for that last half hour. It's a test for Drogba's ego to have to accept that, but I think Biello, I think he cast his lot with the group that he has, and it's up to Drogba to accept it at this point.
Do you think Drogba will be back for this team? Do you think they'll let him back in? If he comes out publicly and
I'm
says,
surprised.
Hey, I was wrong.
Yeah. I'm surprised how it sounded like you do think he will be back.
I kind of do.
Yeah.
I kind of do. Because, look, all great athletes, especially as athletes as great as Drogba, have pretty healthy egos. And, you know, I'm sure this hurts. I'm sure it's embarrassing. But Drogba, first and foremost, throughout his career, has been a winner. He has been the guy who steps up and leads in times of crisis for his clubs.
Stop the
civil war for a moment in his country.
No, he beat Barcelona single-handedly with a Chelsea team that didn't belong on the field.
My money is on him going into the locker room, apologizing, doing what he has to do, and then playing a crucial role in that, you know, in the next game and then in the playoffs.
There's a lot to play for Montreal. Currently fifth in the Eastern Conference. They've got 45 points. They have a chance to get into that four spot with DC United if they can win the game here in the final day of the season. That's a pretty big deal for them to get that home game. We saw what they've been able to do at home, especially last year in the knockout round. That was good for them. They smashed Toronto FC. That was maybe one of the best moments in their franchise history. They go to New England, which could have been a huge game had New England handled business in Chicago. They did not do that. On the other side, if you go down this decision day for the Eastern Conference, again, 4 p.m. Eastern, it's going to be hard to watch all those games, especially because National TV took two Western Conference games. So if you're an Eastern Conference fan, I can't recommend enough. If you don't have MLS Live, $7.99, just $8. I think you can triple screen on there.
You
if
can
I'm right.
also then go back and watch replays.
Yep.
So you can go back and watch what you missed, and the condensed games are awesome.
Yeah,
it's like 15, 20 minutes. Yeah,
yeah,
you get everything you want.
DC United going to Orlando, where Orlando haven't been very good this season at home, but they did go to Philly and win this weekend. There's a lot to play for in the East. It's really all about seeding. Who gets those home games? Who's in those positions to do that?
Can we give a nod to RFK? 30,000 fans at
31,000.
This one? 31,000.
Yeah, their largest turnout since 2008.
I'm going there next, but let's talk TFC first because
sorry.
Sebastian Giovinco is back.
Yeah,
he's back.
Shooting.
He's
on site.
He's always shooting. He led the league in shots. Him and Devin Villa haven't seen a shot that they won't take. 9 shots against Montreal, but Jozy Altidore once again put this team on his back and is getting it done. He's got a goal and assist in this one. And Ben Bear, the research bear, when Jozy gets that second assist, is like, oh, he didn't mean to do that. Like, doesn't matter. Biggest man in the box got up and cushioned a ball down for his partner.
See, I actually kind of thought he did mean to do that.
I kind of thought so, too.
Yeah.
Like, and it doesn't matter if he's like, I'm going to aim it for your foot. It's just you bring it down and put it in a dangerous place, and that's his job. Toronto FC, despite the 2-2 draw, feeling good. They're out of that shield race. We talked to Greg Vanney. There was a little disappointment there.
I love what they've done. They've handled Jozy well this year. Mm-hmm. They've handled this Giovinco injury well. They're playing well. He comes back, but Jozy can still carry the team, sort of. And then Giovinco comes in. He clearly looks healthy, which I think a lot of teams in MLS would worry and rush a guy back towards the end of the season.
They held off.
They understood that they had enough talent. They understood how the playoffs are going to work out. I really like what Toronto's doing going into the playoffs.
And I think they assumed in holding back Giovinco that they were going to get the job done at home with Jozy, with Michael Bradley, with these other guys that they've brought in and the team they've created.
It hasn't happened for them.
Yeah, but now they got a cupcake. They got Chicago in the last day of the season, an opportunity here, and they've already locked in that at least a home game. They will play a home game at BMO, but they could get the bye, which is huge.
They could. The one thing I worry about a little bit with Toronto, and this is weird to say because they have, by the numbers, the second best defense in the league, is things haven't gone right on the right side of that defense over the last month and a half, maybe 2 months. Steven Bannishore looks a little bit leggy at this point. Eric Zavaleta has struggled. I mean, that's where Piatti went to work on them yesterday. And they're going to play a Chicago team that'll line up David Akam against those particular guys, and David Akam can ruin your day single-handedly. That's not to say he will.
Right.
Toronto should be embarrassed if they don't get all 3 points at home against Chicago. But this, I'm going to say, this is not a cupcake. It's a game they should win, but this is not just mark it down in pen.
Big game for Toronto FC as they attempt to perhaps get a bye. New York City FC limping a little bit right now because DC United are flying. 3-1 win for United at RFK Stadium. You guys mentioned it. 30-plus thousand. The place can rock still now. I mean, look, with Raccoons, it's probably like 33,000. So good crowd going for them there. Lloyd Sam, the Red Bulls, their arch rivals, traded a very productive winger to DC United who went out and have made a bunch of moves, as they always do, as Ben Olsen and Dave Casper always do. They go get MLS experienced guys, the Lamar Nagels of the world, the Patty Mullins of the world, drink everyone at home, and I'm sure he's going to talk about them here. And they just get it done. They figure it out how to do it without dropping a bunch of money.
Well, they've done it in a completely – like the moving pieces, as you said, in terms of financial transactions and where they're getting their players from, is very similar to years past for DC.
And Kennedy Igboanike is just in, like, basically like purgatory with them right now.
The thing that's different about this DC is they're playing beautiful soccer. This is not Benny Ball, you know. This is not grind you down, wear you out, you know, long balls up the flanks, and you know, hope that Chris Rolfe and Fabian Espíndola do something interesting. This is like intricate, beautiful soccer through the midfield. It's been fun to watch, and you know, as we said, the turnout, 31,000 people. Mm-hmm. It's been a decade since DC has done that. All to see Patty Mullins before he gets sold to Barcelona. You know, it's been wonderful to watch.
I think he's more of a Dortmund guy. You know, if I'm being
that's true.
Being
he's a value buy. Mm-hmm. Are we about to call DC United the Dortmund of
I don't know
of MLS?
It seems like you're on the brink.
Just about there.
You're really
close. I'm going to draw myself back.
Yeah, just for now. Just
when
I look at
unsure of what's
if they do it in the playoffs. A little bit of a comedy of errors at the back at times for NYCFC. That's nothing new. This team has been poor, borderline bad defensively for much of the season. They've just managed to outscore folks.
They're the most schizophrenic team in the league, right? They're a team. Every team in MLS goes on big runs, but New York will go terrible loss to great win to terrible loss. And it's not like four game spans. It's one game here and there because they want to play so much out of the back that when they make mistakes,
that was a comedy of errors.
That third goal as bad a goal as I've seen given up in Major League Soccer this year.
On MLS Match Day Live, Kevin Brown had a field day with that one. Had a lot of funny things to say about it. They're not going to go away from that. They're going to play out of the back. We know that. But you sometimes wonder if those guys can handle it. Up top, it's still on David Villa, I think, with Frank Lampard not there and Tommy Mack not the same kind of goal threat that he was for the first 3 months of the season or so. Yeah, Jack Harrison as well. He's hit a little bit of a rookie wall. David Villa scored his 22nd in this one, and had they not given up that garbage play around the back and by the way, Patty Mullins intercepts this pass because he fell down in the box.
That's exactly what Borussia Dortmund looked for.
Yeah, Patrick Mullins.
Accidental interceptions. Huge in the Bundesliga. So the 3-1 loss killed him there. David Villa gives the 22 goals. But BWP is one ahead of him with one game left for the Golden Boot. The only player, as we've said many times, to score 20 goals in two seasons in MLS. He has 23 now because he got two against Columbus Crew SC at Red Bull Arena. The Red Bulls, a 3-2 win. They locked in, basically, as I said, that number one seed in the East. They also gave their collective fan base like five heart attacks again because this team just doesn't seem to be able to hold on to leads without having some sort of dramatic finish there. Crew SC almost came back in this one. And if we're talking about, you know, Colorado getting a 1-0 result on the road in the playoffs being a good thing, a 3-2 result at home in the playoffs is not a good thing. That's two away goals.
Yeah, I was at this game. The first half was pretty lifeless between both the teams. A penalty kick conceded in a comedic way as well by Brad Stuver in his MLS debut to open it up. And then he saves just such a soft shot from Sasha Kljestan, which you just expect better. And then nothing happened. And then in the second half,
There was some good movement. Crew SC went to sleep defensively because that's what Crew SC has been doing. And Bradley Wright Phillips been watching a lot of Jovinko highlight reels. Cut back, Meg the goalkeeper from no angle for a goal.
Thierry Henry.
Okay, fine. But Jovinko as well right now. Okay. I don't know if Bradley Phillips have ever watched Thierry Henry play. I'm not sure about that.
The familiarity there is fleeting.
But so he's four short of his record that he set. Mm-hmm. So that means that New England Revolution still have a shot because he's got to at least score five against Philly next week. So that goal differential might be alive. It's fun, though, that New York and New York they're in a race for first place. Now Villa and Bradley Wright Phillips are in a race for the Golden Boot. And hopefully, maybe they'll match up in the playoffs.
Do you think the NYCFC has been good for the Red Bulls over the last 2 years?
Absolutely, 100%. I think you've seen their core solidify more. Mm-hmm. I have friends who are soccer fans that were Red Bull fans because they live in New York, but they watch European soccer. And I think the buzz of the first rivalry game and the animosity has solidified them as, no, I'm really a Red Bull fan. I'm not just a guy who lives in New York area that watches soccer.
Right? And it solidifies like roles and kind of where you stand.
Team
in
identity.
Where you stand in kind of this, you know, back and forth, light and dark, so to speak. And you get into that side and you say, no, this is us. And we want to be this. And we're proud of this. And we're the Red Bulls. And we have a direct opposition that we can point to.
And these guys are pretty amped for a potential playoff meeting between these two teams. I want to tell you listeners right now, the stars in their eyes. And
it
everything.
Would be awesome. It would be the best event. I mean,
if Pescadito could referee it, then it would be the best MLS game of all time.
2 years ago when the Revs played New York and the Revs traveled in huge numbers to Red Bull Arena and it was loud, and then the Red Bull fans went there and Gillette Stadium was packed. It'll be that time something for this one, which would be just be so much fun to be around.
Yeah, amazing. Red Bulls did clinch first in the East. Columbus Crew SC, you know, they're out of it right now, figuring out what they're going to do for next season. Philadelphia Union, you mentioned it, maybe giving up those five goals. It's because they're crashing right now. They haven't burned because New England couldn't get it done and couldn't put pressure on them. But this is not a good period for the Union. I think that's six straight without a win. 2-0 loss to Orlando, who are dead and buried in the playoff race at home. This is not the time you want this to happen if you're the Union. What do they do? I mean, they're going to go on the road. What does Jim Curtin do in the next, you know, week and a half to get something, anything, some sort of traction?
This performance kind of shocked me because I thought Philly were pretty good last week at the Red Bulls in that 3-2 loss. I mean, they were right in that game to the end. This one, they looked a little bit stagnant. They weren't able to get out on the break, which is where they're at their most effective. Look, CJ Sapong is still not threatening in front of goal. Because of that, they're sending more and more numbers forwards. They're overlapping with both fullbacks. And when that happens, the door is left wide open for goals like the one Carlos Rivas scored to open the game. Then Baptista scored almost a very similar
track
goal as
meet
well.
Goals.
Rivas is unbelievably fast,
too. Yeah,
he is. I wish he could put it together, but there's no one that's going to catch him. And then Blake, unfortunately, gets a touch to both the goals, but was phenomenal in the game, as he always is. Mm-hmm. And it's like you watch the highlights, and it's either the best save of the year or, soft goal. And it's not his fault because he's under pressure in those moments. And Herber's also had a big miss in this one.
Yep,
and we've talked about he sets guys up, but he doesn't finish. Pontius has gone cold, which is fine because he's not supposed to score 22 goals this season.
Yeah, 12 goals and 6 assists from a winger is a very, very good year. They need more from Sapong. They haven't gotten it, and I think that's something that they will address in this offseason.
Yeah, look, that'll be something they have to address. They're going to have to address Tranquilo Barneta leaving as well. There's going to be some holes, some moves that they have to make. Ernie Stewart has had a good first year in charge of this club on the technical side, but they have some big decisions to make coming
They've still only been in the playoffs once, ever.
Yeah, I mean,
so
look,
they're still trying to clinch.
And that's what Jim Curtin said. He was asked after this game, you know, is this a successful season considering you guys have basically clinched the playoffs? I mean, it's all but done. And at first he kind of said no, but he came back around to it and essentially admitted, yes, that this is a good step forward for them. But you do imagine that there's going to be more. It wasn't a one-step plan from Ernie Stewart.
If you went back to February or early March and you offered Union fans, hey, you're going to have three spectacular rookies, you're going to sign a DP U.S. national teamer in the prime of his career, you're going to get a bounce-back season from Chris Pontius, and you're going to make the playoffs, every single Union fan in the world would have taken that deal for 2016. And I believe in Jim Curtin. I think he does a good job, and I think that next year will be even better for this team.
All right, let's talk New England before we get to the break. They fell flat here, guys. I think you picked him. What, did you pick him to go to the Cup? Wasn't that something?
I might have.
I think you picked him for Supporters
Shield. Supporters Shield, yeah.
Which was more likely.
Yeah.
I just want, I mean, they're going to finish off the pace in that one, obviously, far off the pace. They're 20 points back right now. So,
are you willing to guarantee that?
Yeah, I'm going to make that guarantee. I feel
wow,
very safe
ETI
in that.
Guarantees.
What should New England fans be thinking right now?
They should be thinking, God, I hope our team signs some defenders for next year. I think that in September, when they looked really good, and then, you know, made that run to the Open Cup final, a lot of it was due to Gershon Kofi being healthy and playing in that number six role. Once he got hurt, their season was pretty much over. I think they try to bring him back. They should, even though they have that Xavier Kwase.
Yeah.
But I think I want the Revs to keep that front six intact and try to figure out what went wrong with the defense.
I think we already said win, maybe. I don't know what you do with Kai Kamara because you gave up a lot. But to me, this has to be Rowan Agudelo's team, the way that they play. So if Kai can't be on board with that or you can't fit him in, you got to find a way to get something for him.
A reminder here, Decision Day coming up on October 23rd on Sunday. All the games at 4 p.m. Eastern. Remember, tune into MLS Match Day Live at 3. Matt and I, Siggy Schmidt, Martin Rennie, an all-star squad to guide you through what is going to be a wild day. Of course, CCL in midweek. We haven't even talked about it. Let's go to the mailbag and do it, guys.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at extratime radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Back now on Extra Time Radio. Andrew Wiebe, Matt Doyle, David Goss into the mailbag here on MLSsoccer.com. Let's start with Cole Robinson on Twitter. What is the Octagon, guys? He says it's from the intro to every ETR show, and he's not exactly sure. That's definitely a Doyle question. Explain to us, what is the Octagon, and why do we call it that?
The one of the first shows we did that was all three of us.
I think it was like the
first
five shows.
I do the show from my living room, and I have two cats that absolutely hate each other, and so there was a literal cat fight on Extra Time Radio.
Yeah,
and so
that was good audio.
Yeah,
good radio. What are the cats' names, and who usually wins said fights?
General So and Taquito. General So is a 10-year-old gray tabby. She's a lovely middle-aged lady, and Taquito is a 2-year-old orange tabby male.
Taquito's losing these fights.
No, he's
dominating.
Ripping her apart.
Oh.
He has a lot of male privilege,
gotcha.
And she's a little bit of a drama queen, so it's 4 a.m. when they go at
boy.
It. It's tough to get a night's sleep.
Oh, it's 4 a.m.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's the Octagon.
Time.
Yeah, because there's cat battles going on. We've since required that Doyle split up the cats. Well, we've not required it. It's more just best practice sort of thing. So we don't get those going anymore. We still call it the Octagon, though. It's the broom closet here because there's no windows, so we kind of feel like we're entrapped in a whitewashed.
You're like a couple of little Harry Potters, the two
That's
of you.
That's exactly what I was just thinking.
I don't even get that reference.
You've never read Harry Potter?
I have, but I just doesn't.
He lives in a broom closet at, 14 Privet Lane? Did I get the street wrong?
Oh, really?
That's Privet the Drive?
Okay, all right. Harry.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll stop. All right, I'll stop. What else we got in
this
here?
This is so much worse than it could be. Kosa Fabrikis, and he says on Twitter, TFC won't go anywhere until we realize we're much better without Bradley. Sheru is so much more effective.
I mean, whatever. Sheru's really good, but he's not more effective than
Wait,
Bradley.
You don't think that the Twitter eggs analysis is worth your time right now?
Egg, yeah.
So,
but
let's talk about this.
Yeah, we didn't really talk about this after we talked to Greg Vanney, right? Because we asked him about Michael Bradley. We kind of joked about Swansea City.
Right.
But we didn't ask him specifically, like, hey, what if AC Milan comes in here and Michael's like, that's my dream club, right? I mean, he probably would want to go, no?
And I think they'd want to sell him if the number's right. You don't get an opportunity to sell a player for a big number that often.
Plus, it creates a level of credibility within the franchise and the local community and for the league if you're selling players to AC Milan. And look, if AC Milan is coming out and buying Michael Bradley, they're not buying him to sit him. They're buying him to, you know, be, if not the starter, then like the 12th man on the team. I think this is one of the clubs that no matter who you are, you take the call, and if the numbers are right, you probably
and go. There's playing time to be had there because they're in a bad spot right now, AC Milan. They're struggling to buy players, mm-hmm. so they've tried to work on the cheap and get guys on loan who are the odd man out at a club where they got bought for by a lot of money, which is unfortunately really easy to find through the world of soccer. But I think you talk about credibility also for that next Giovinco, the next guy who you say – you're 26, come here, play for us. You can still be relevant with your national team. And if it comes up that you want to make a move, we are open to that conversation.
Yep.
This is not a guarantee we're going to do it, but we're open to it. That's part of being part of the world soccer market that MLS teams weren't for a while, and now I just think it's worthwhile,
too. And look, if you sell them, it's roster construction. Sure, you're losing Michael Browdy, you're losing a DP, but you're gaining a DP spot, and you're gaining – a bunch of allocation money that you can reinvest in your club, as well as some money that doesn't go into allocation, doesn't go into your roster building, but you could drop into your academy.
Yep, absolutely. And which is, by the way, how they funded the academy complex in the first place when they sold Maurice Sandu 10 years ago. And for what it's worth, they really like Marky Delgado and think that Marky Delgado's long-term spot might be D-mid. So this is, look, it's not officially a rumor yet, but I think this is something to keep an eye on.
No doubt about that. CCL this week, we've alluded to it as we've gone through the show because you have Portland in action. You got FC Dallas in action. Sporting KC is in action, but they're already out, so it doesn't really matter.
So Central FC, both teams are out.
Right. That's going to be interesting to see what kind of lineups we see in that one. Take us through these games, though, Dave. Wednesday, Saprissa at Portland, 10 p.m. Eastern.
If they don't have Valeri, I don't know if they have enough to get a result.
Can you play Valeri in this game? Especially when you pulled him off early and you've got this must-win in Vancouver?
I think Valeri sits no matter what. I don't even know who the backup attacking midfielder would be on that team. I mean, can they bring in the Hungarian-American kid, Viljan Bijev, from
T2? Yeah, T2. They can. Yeah. They can bring anyone in from T2.
And I think he led USL in assists. Yeah. He's got a little bit of experience overseas. They might be interested in signing him for real.
Or you slot Nagby in there.
I don't think Nagby plays either.
You don't think Nagby's going to play in this game?
I think they saved the start. Most of the key starters for the game in Vancouver.
I would be
walking away from a CCL quarterfinal spot.
I thought
not walking away, but putting the odds,
taking a risk because this is a Saprissa team that will come in and beat you.
Absolutely,
they are not unbeatable. So there's chance for Portland to win this game, but they went down and didn't play a strong enough team at Saprissa in San Jose to get a result there.
The Timbers felt like they were kind of jobbed by the refs in that
game. Which is not true at all. Okay. It's not true at all. If you give up 20 opportunities and a few of them bounce for you and then a few calls go against you, that is even to me. Right. If you go into a game and you get outshot 18-2, you don't get jobbed by the referee.
Shots don't matter.
Yeah,
some moron said that shots matter.
For sure.
I was going to fake a Bob Bradley call when you were talking earlier about Keane and sitting one of the two. Bring, bring. That's Bruce calling in for you right now.
I think it would be unfortunate if Portland didn't. For FC Dallas, they don't really have options. I mean, they can sit guys, but they don't have a USL squad to pull from, and they don't have healthy guys.
Their bench is not hugely deep either.
Yeah.
Right.
So they kind of have to play the team that they have.
Do you go down there and just bunker?
You stick
Ruiz up top and figure he can be opportunistic in Guatemala in his homeland?
I don't even know if you'd...
Absolutely. You absolutely start Carlos Ruiz in that game. And I'm looking at their roster right now. They have Figueroa. Maybe you start either Zimmerman or Hedges alongside Aaron Guillen, the young homegrown defender that they've given a couple minutes to. Aubrey David, who is Trinidad and Tobago. He played with Saprissa, so he's not going to be intimidated by Central America. I think they have answers in the back. They might have some answers in the midfield. Guys,
what's the Colombian's name?
Juan Esteban Ortiz and Carlos Lizarrazo. Play the two of them with Victor Ulloa or something like
maybe
that.
Maybe figure out what that midfield might look like if Acosta can't play in these games. Yeah. And Mauro Diaz, as I said, we're assuming.
The big question is, do you have a forward who can, if you're going to use Ruiz in that game, do you have a forward then that you can rely on?
Well, I thought he'd start Jederson just to get the legs out there and have him run around and then bring Ruiz on when he wants.
Yeah, I mean, look, if Ruiz starts, you tell him, hey, don't run if you don't feel like it.
I don't think you have to tell him.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's not a. That's
I think he's aware of the fact.
Not a communication aspect for him there. But look, even if they get through the quarterfinals, and once again, there's a little bit of speculation going on right now with this Mauro Diaz injury, but it certainly
but
looks
to-
like his. But you go. I know. You've got to get there first. But then you're looking at a quarterfinal, perhaps without Mauro Diaz, and it just. I'm just so sad about it still that.
But you have time to replace Fabian Castillo. You have time to build a roster because if let's say the injury is as long as you think it is, that means they have to build a team for next season that doesn't have him in it.
At least for a significant portion.
So no matter what. They got hurt at a really bad time this year with the Castillo move. They weren't able to really make a replacement. They got lucky with Ruiz, but that's not long-term. They also maybe, okay, so now you have that Castillo spot. Maybe you go out and get a legitimate center forward. Maybe that's where you invest that money because you think Diaz is coming back later. You have more of a defensive-style central midfield in Ulloa and Acosta starting in Grueso throughout the year. And you go out and you get a legit number nine.
Grueso's he's legit, man. He's going to be – if they do anything the rest of this year, and I think they'll still be good and very, very competitive, Carlos Guerrero is going to be A1 in that.
Yeah.
He's
and,
unreal.
And you know, we were just talking about possible January moves. I wouldn't be shocked at all if somebody came in and
they
made Dallas a very good offer.
I mean, look, this year, if you're looking at, like, young central midfielders, Dallas probably have the two best, the best American and the best international one, I think, in Guerrero. If you're talking about, like, 23 and under, Guerrero and Acosta, I don't know that anybody in MLS – is better, has
you
a better
keep
pairing.
Looking at me
no,
I'm racking
my brain.
Yeah, we're waiting to see if you're going to come in.
I don't really like
here.
Carlos Carreza as a player that much.
Really?
Oh.
Yeah. I think he's a decent holding midfielder. I don't think he does anything for you in the passing game and in possession. And
I mean, I think he had like a second assist directly to Mauro Diaz's foot on Carlos Ruiz's goal.
He had one good pass. I'm sorry.
I didn't realize that it's been a full season.
All right.
Now we're both cherry picking.
Yeah, and I find that he fouls a little bit too often when you could just slow up playing.
He does foul a lot. I mean, that's fair, but yeah. he's a pretty good player.
I don't think he's not good. I'm saying
Alonso falls a lot too.
Right.
Okay,
I'm saying in comparison to Kellen Acosta and Victor Ulloa and what they've done there. Mm-hmm.
The Fighting David Gosses are not going to be coming in January with an offer for Carlos Guerrero. That much we know. But
our mascot is the Blue Hens.
Oh, is it? If you were listening to David on Sunday,
woo!
You would have heard New York Red Bulls too. They're going to the final, baby. Swope Park Rangers, New York Red Bulls too.
Yeah.
Two MLS. Teams there, basically.
Affiliates, yeah. Mm-hmm. New York Red Bull 2 at Red Bull Arena.
Another PK?
Host it. Yeah, another PK shootout. Me and Andrew did one last week. This one, Ryan Mira made two saves. That's an MLS player. Mm-hmm. And it was a good time. Louisville City, another good year. Kadeem Dakers on their wing. He's 24, so maybe a little
Dacris.
Bit too old.
Whatever.
Dakers is how it's on the pronunciation. Okay. Thank you for after I said it for 120 minutes now telling me. Yeah. But I'm pretty sure I'm right. But he was pretty impressive.
He was good in the combine a couple years ago. I was surprised he didn't make an MLS team.
Yeah, he got drafted by
the Fire
and
yeah,
didn't get a contract.
Fire,
Aiden Quinn sits in their midfield.
Fire,
mm-hmm. He's a decent player
fire,
on the ball.
Sorry.
There are good players in these USL standalone teams that I think are worth
it's going to take, I think, a few years for a lot of these independent USL teams to build this sort of top-to-bottom or bottom-to-top, if you want to say, continuity and structure that they need in order to compete season after season after season, because there's still a lot of turnover on those rosters. Whereas with the MLS teams, with the Red Bulls and the Galaxy especially, I think you've seen a lot of stability. Look, Brandon Allen is making the same runs for that New York team that he was making for the Academy 10 years or 8 years ago, and the same runs that Bradley Wright Phillips makes for the first team. So there's a little bit of an inherent advantage, I think, and if you talk to some USL guys, they'll tell you about that. But there's a lot of enthusiasm about the league and about the improving quality of play, and I think you see it.
The one thing that's going to be interesting now is now that you have a little bit longer time with the affiliate teams, what do you do with the 24-year-old guys? What do you do with the guys who
Chris Terpak,
right? Yeah. Or
he got a couple goals for yep. Swope Park,
right? For New York Red Bull.
By
too.
The way, I would be shocked if we don't see him play against Central FC.
Yeah. So it's just that question of the guy who you kind of realize you like having him in your team. He understands your club's ethos. Maybe he's a local guy, but he isn't going to be a starter in MLS.
Right.
Where do you put him, or do you bring in a 24-year-old you don't know and see if you give him a shot for a year? How much turnover is going to be on these rosters?
This is a good question for our friend Bobby Warshaw, who's actually filling that role for Harrisburg City Islanders.
Somebody told me he retired today. Really? I hadn't heard that from Bobby myself.
No. All right. Well, we got to get Bobby on the horn.
Yeah, we definitely need to check in with on that. You know what this leads me to? And somehow we forgot about it. We're putting together the show today, and we're just so enamored with all these MLS results and Decision Day, which, once again, October 23rd, 4 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. for that MLS Match Day Live. The expansion priority draft went down this weekend.
The draft.
Yeah, the draft of the draft. And, let's talk about that before we get out of here, because we have to. Number one overall going expansion draft goes to Atlanta. Minnesota will be two in that. The super draft, Minnesota got the number one overall pick in 2017. Atlanta's top of allocation, so if they want to bring back, say, a Jeff Cameron, who, I don't know, you throw enough money at him, maybe he decides now's the time.
If they knew they were able to do that, they would have taken allocation number one.
I agree. Yep. No doubt about that. But super draft going to Minnesota first, what do you think of that? Who might they take?
Is it Dunlady? Right now?
No, I think it'll be Ebobise, the U-20 right. U.S. forward.
Alongside Christian Ramirez?
That's the thing. I don't know how they'll work that. I mean, maybe they – look, Ramirez is a good player, and I think he's going to be a good player in MLS. It can't hurt to have a 19-year-old, 20-year-old backup who has, I think, star potential down the road. So I would expect that. I mean, the monkey wrench is the presence of Jackson Yuhl, who's a Minnesota kid, played in the Minnesota Thunder Academy. I don't think he was affiliated with the Minnesota United Academy, though I assume they're working hard to try to get a homegrown claim.
I mean, you know, the Tommy Reddings and Tyler Turners of the world.
Exactly. They were part of
Orlando.
Yeah.
They found a way to get that done.
But they signed with the USL team.
That's also
they were
a good
on
point.
The roster when they moved into Major League Soccer.
Yuhl would probably be a top three, top five prospect. So there are some things that can make it interesting. I was shocked that the expansion draft.
I know, that's what I was just about to ask you. I think most people, based on the statistics in previous years and the fact that you look 2 or 3 years down the line and usually your expansion draft picks, you know, aren't there, to me, that says maybe that Atlanta think the depth of the league is better than it was before and that they're going to be able to get more value out of that.
They think that there's
McDonough's
only going to be.
This. Paul McDonough's done this before.
One guy. And if you want to have that first pick because you want the one guy that you want, and also it 100% gives you the potential to trade it because you know what you can get. And so teams can come out and say, we want this guy. We'll trade you.
We'll get you some allocation money. So maybe that's basically like, hey, give us free 100K in allocation maybe.
Two guys, good point, and I just want to say this. Two guys who went in the last expansion draft, Tommy McNamara and Patrick Mullins. So if you can if you can get talent like that, it makes sense. But to me, it just seems like such a crapshoot.
Yep. Pay attention to all that. There's going to be, after the season's over, they'll actually start to do this stuff. Expansion draft will kick it off, and that's always fascinating. Just 5 picks for each of them. That's a little bit different than in the past when teams got 10. Before we get out of here, Steve Jobs coached Swansea City to a 3-2 loss against Arsenal this weekend.
I thought that was Sterling Archer.
Yeah. With the mock turtle, that's a good look. Bob Bradley, though, his first game in the Premier League, a loss to Arsenal at Arsenal, so not necessarily a bad result. They were up a man, though, and had a ton of chances.
Yep.
They also responded from being down 2-0 on the road.
2-0 and then 3-1 down. They played really good soccer. I mean, Bob has kind of been pigeonholed incorrectly by a lot of the American fan base as a guy who just wants his team to play robotic soccer. That's not the way his teams have played. Look, if the finishing was better, then they would have had a pretty legendary result.
Although if the finishing was better, he wouldn't be there.
Right. Well, the real problem is that defense.
Right.
That defense is a smoking tire fire. And they sold their captain and best central defender to Everton last year.
Ashley Williams.
This summer. And they do not have a replacement. They do not have an organizer. And I don't know how he's going to fix that because it was a wreck.
We were watching this game with Adrian Heath. And, of course, he's an England fan. And Theo Walcott gets a couple goals in this game. But he also bangs the post in, like, 1v1 situations a couple times. You've never seen a man so frustrated as Adrian Heath. It's like both frustration and resignation. Just like, that's
being an England fan, I think.
Yeah, that's
basically what we expected. Was it absurd that I watched through the handshake because I was, like, stoked to watch Bob Bradley and Arsene Wenger handshake after, like, a legitimate competitive game?
It's a little bit absurd. Yeah.
I thought so. Uh-huh. The moment it happened, I was like,
I think we have one more here before we get out of here from Matt Pollard on Twitter. What's he saying to us?
I don't know. Why don't you tell me, Andrew?
Yeah? I'm just trying to throw it your way.
He wants to – well, you threw it out there that we're going down to Columbus for USA Mexico.
We are
bringing the show on the road. I don't know why we have to announce that, but we do. And
why wouldn't we have to announce that? What would
well, isn't it obvious we bring the show everywhere we go in our hearts and our souls?
That's true. That's true.
And I carry physically the equipment on my shoulders. But
you're in your 20s. Yeah. Weeby's not anymore.
Oh, yeah. Man. These
one time Weeby carried it, and all of a sudden there was a big announcement, like, we should get smaller, more efficient equipment. Because Andrew.
These spindly arms just can't do
that's
it.
That's veteran savvy right
yeah,
there.
It is.
So.
Yeah.
We were looking for places.
That's called adjusting on the fly. Those are tactics,
yeah,
Dave.
That is true. That is very Bob Bradley of you.
It is.
So Matt Pollard says maybe we should go to Frankie Haddock's man cave.
Yeah, we should definitely do that.
Does Frankie know?
No, that's why I'm.
I feel like he would be really chill about it if you showed up with like a 30 pack or something, and you know, like, all right, guys, let's do a let's do a podcast.
Yeah,
about
guys,
some soccer.
It takes me an hour to skateboard to Monterey Stadium, so we got to get this done now.
Frankie Haddock, man, legend, love the guy. We're gonna reach out to him. I'm gonna reach out to him, and maybe I'll look out for you and get a little bit of smaller equipment on the way. Probably not though.
If you guys go, you have to. Well,
oh,
I mean, to Frankie's,
okay.
you have to set up the beep test. You have to challenge Frankie in the beep
he
test.
He is probably in perfect shape.
He is, if you're talking U.S. soccer circles, like with awe.
How many beeps you given us, Dave?
You and me?
Yeah.
I've only seen it, like, done properly a couple times. I think we could get through, like, 5 or 6 at least, right? It goes pretty slow at first,
right.
Although my endurance has taken a hit.
Since you stopped with your Broadway dance lesson.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, hey, look,
the kick line.
That's all we got here.
Let me ask you
today.
This.
Oh, we don't.
How many beeps do you think I feel like Bob Bradley's in good shape.
He's doing it right now.
Yeah.
He's
for fun.
In England,
he's like, hey, guys, this is the beep test just to show you. This is how it's done.
Right.
Beep, beep, that's beep, how he cools down.
90 minutes later.
Uh-huh, Gylfi Sigurdsson's like, how is this guy in such good shape?
Hey, he's doing it in a mock turtleneck. This is bizarre. Yeah. So strange, this Bob Bradley fella. Hey, thanks for listening along today. We had a great time with you. Just a reminder, as if I haven't reminded you enough, Sunday, October 23rd is decision day. All 10 games, the final 10 regular season games in MLS for 2016 will be played at 4 p.m. Eastern. Seattle RSL on ESPN, LA Dallas on FS1, a whip-around show on ESPN2, which is going to be a blast, no doubt about that. And if you want to watch your team on one of those MLS Live games, $7.99 for the one-day pass. Go check that out. And then, once it's over, make sure you hit that bracket challenge and join our ETR League. We'll figure out what we're going to give out for that. Maybe 2017 MLS Live. We've got a bunch of swag sitting around, some signed balls. We'll do our thing in that way. With that, we'll be back on Thursday to preview the games. See you next time.
You're listening to Extra Time Radio.